Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Make It Great Show. I am great, not because someone told me, but because I believe. I believe in my abilities to achieve the impossible. I am strong beyond measure. I am smart without a doubt. High I will aim. Shout loudly I proclaim that I am great. I am great from my inner core. Deeply I believe that no obstacle is too large, too much to overcome. I am a conqueror. Opposition I will slay, for this is the day I say that I am great. I am great. I know who I am. I stand tall and erect. Nothing intimidates me. From the moment I begin, I win. I am defined by greatness and nothing less. My only option is success. Action proves it best that I am great. Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Make It Great Show with your host, Phenicia Hubbard, and co-host, Beverly Rogers and Candace Cole. This is the Common Sense Connection, where we discuss topics that expand your mind and challenge you to rethink and resurrect common sense. For a listing of upcoming guests and topics, visit Phenicia.com.
All right. Welcome to another Sunday edition of the Make It Great Show. This is our very first show in 2013. And on the Make It Great Show, what we want to do is encourage you and empower, inspire, and uplift you to choose to make it great every single day. This is a special show that we have tonight because not only is it our first topic of the year, or first show of the year, but we're talking about a topic that many people tend to focus on at the beginning of the year, and that is health. And so what I want to ask you today, all of our listeners, is are you ready to embrace this year with good health, meaning physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually? Will you embrace good and great health this year? You know, life is waiting for you to just show up and shine every single day of this year, no matter what. And are you going to answer that call? Will you show up? You know, greatness truly is reserved for you. And so I want to open up our show today before I bring on my fantastic co-host, Deb Rogers. I want to open up with a love letter to our listeners. And this love letter was written by the soulful and beautiful Erica Harris of EmpathicWriter.com. And what she's doing is calling us to enter into this year the way that we're supposed to. Dear ladies in waiting, you are a supreme and generative creator. You have spent years and lifetimes refining the treasures within you. And it is time now to cast those treasures outside of you. What have you been waiting for? More money, time, support, knowledge? Activate and release your work first. Then those things that you were awaiting will appear. They will chase you down and insist that you have and enjoy them. You have died the death of linear logic. Your feminine resurrection now summons you to luscious life, born through your hips and lips. Will you sway? Will you say? Will you allow your season of free expression? Will you add your nectar fragrance to the air we breathe? Or will you tuck it away in an attic for another time? Your words, your curves, your underwater nerves are begging to surface, to be seen, known, and heard by the hard angles, the soft angles that indwell this place we choose to call home. So fluff the pillows and set loose the power that burns between your breasts. That heat, that light is not for your protective sleep. It is for the risk of daily dawn. So mother, daughter, sister, lover, matriarch, queen, goddess that you are, wait. I think not. Those days have set. Would you think the sun or moon polite if they withheld their luminosity? You are no less and no different from those icons in the sky, and the world will remain in disarray unless and until we stop this waiting and instead start beaming the beauty and wisdom and comfort and harmony that is ours to beam. And so with that, I want to welcome you all to the Make It Great Show, and I want to bring on my co-host, who is always beaming with her positive spirit, Ms. Bev Rogers. Hey, Bev, how are you doing this Sunday?
I am doing well. It is a great new year. It came in with a flurry. You would think that it was kind of slow, but it's unbelievable. We're already 6 days into it, and it has passed so quickly. So our topic of health is so important today, because I'm wondering how many of us have been listening to how bad the flu is, and, you know, the cold is here, and I'm aching, and I'm paining, and, you know, when you really think about all the things that are going on, how much does your health depend on what you hear from other people?
That is so true. That's so true. And so we're going to talk about that today and definitely help our listeners have something that they can take away to help them reflect and actually analyze that question. You know, how much of it is affected by the things that we take in around us. I love that. Before we jump into our topic for today, I know you like to have a focus for the year. You know, you've probably done your year-end review from 2012. Now you're ready for 2013. Do you mind sharing some things that you are taking into the new year and what your motto is?
Well, my motto, I was talking to a friend, so this is not my own, but we were just kind of chit-chatting. I hadn't talked to her in a while. And we were saying that we made it through 2012. As we said at our church, we prevailed through 2012. We made it into 2013. And we're going to get our butt out of the rut. And not only am I planning to get my butt out of the rut, but I am going to be living in overflow blessings in 2013. And when I talk about overflow blessings, I'm not just talking about, you know, I don't want it to be generic. You know how we get generic on what we think we want or how we want it, how we want to see it. But my overflow blessings are going to be excellent health, pristine fitness, debt-free, financially full, and spiritually in tune with the will of God. Those are my overflow blessings. That's where I'm going for 2013.
That's fantastic, and that rolls off of your tongue with such confidence and assurance that it is just inevitably yours. Like, you are answering the call, and you're saying, yes, this is mine. I love it. I love it, love it.
Absolutely.
It's great. Good business. Hey, we've got a guest online that's logged in. We want to welcome you, and thank you for listening in. And for everybody else, you can listen to us live on blogtalkradio.com/makeitgreat. And if you want to join the conversation, you can call in at 347-327-9281. We welcome your thoughts, your questions, and your comments. So, Bev, this topic of health, this topic is really, really dear to my heart, because when we talk about health, a lot of times people tend to think about physical health, but then there's also the mental, the spiritual health, your emotional health. And lately, I've come to find that a lot of people that I know that are experiencing illnesses, it's because of things that are going on inside of them emotionally, sort of like suppressing things, and that's also connected to what they're doing in their spiritual life and the thoughts that they're thinking in their mental life. So this has a very personal connection with me. One thing I've noticed lately is that a lot of my friends that have issues around, or I'll just say women's issues, you know, are coming to me asking for support. Like, they're ready for healing. And a lot of the healing that we're doing together is about breaking down these thought processes that we have so that we can truly heal. So I'm excited about what we're going to talk about today. Before I tell the listeners the three references that we're going to use today, just want to know if you have any thoughts that you want to share about health and what it means to you?
Well, at this age, you know, I have been in and out of several health challenges, one of them being breast cancer. And I am now I believe it's 19 or 20 year survivor. I've stopped counting. But I do know that once I was cured of breast cancer, it was time for me to move on. And once I gave up the fact that, oh, I've got breast cancer, you know, and I needed to tell the world about it and you know, help everybody, even though they didn't want to be helped, that once I made up my mind that that door was shut and moved someplace else, then I realized that I needed to move on and that there were other health challenges that I needed to address. And you address them as they come. You don't linger on them. You don't wish for them. You know how people say, oh, I feel a headache coming on. You don't feel a headache coming on. You either have it or you don't. So my whole health challenge thing, once you have it, you do what you need to do about it. You articulate how you feel about it. You share it with other people. You help those who need to be helped, and then you move on. And once you move on, you would be surprised. There are other things waiting on the other side for you. So health challenges, being healthy is a challenge as long as you don't do what it takes to stay healthy.
I love that. You know, that reminds me, when you say moving on, it reminds me of this quote by Bernie Siegel. He says that illness is God's reset button. So it's kind of like the illness is going to help you to, you know, face whatever it is you need to face, get it together, reset, and then move on, just like you said. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to dedicate this show that we have today to the Indian student who was just recently brutally gang raped, and then she died from a heart attack after she was so damaged internally that the doctors had to remove her intestines. Her name was not released because in India there are certain restrictions and I won't even say laws, but certain customs around not saying the names of people that have been, or the women that have been, so abused as she was, but her name was just recently released, and it's Jyoti Singh Padney, and I want to dedicate the show to her because I do believe that as women, once we start healing internally, mentally, then, and also collectively, that we can start to heal the world. There are three resources that I want us to really talk about today. So for those of you listening, I encourage you to get your journal in addition to your tea that you're sipping on as you listen to us, or your water or your coffee. Get your journal so you can take some notes, because the three references for us are what I consider must-have references and resources for every woman. The first one is called Women's Bodies, Women's Wisdom. And that's a book by Christiane Northrup. Women's Bodies, Women's Wisdom it's like the Women's Health Bible. She does an excellent job of sharing traditional as well as non-traditional information about women's health. You know, she comes from a left brain and a right brain perspective. And oftentimes we might read books that are in favor of one or the other. But what she does is present the information in a way that empowers the reader to really decide what's best for them. And she has a lot of personal stories, and she's also a medical doctor, as well as someone who embraces other alternative forms of healing. So that's going to be the first one. The second book we're going to look at is Sisters of the Yam by Bell Hooks. And a lot of you all might know Bell Hooks is, you know, she's classified as a feminist or an activist. This is one of her books that really gets to the heart of Black women and healing. Excellent, excellent read. And then the last one is You Can Heal Your Life by Louise Hay, which is addressing not only physical healing, but also that mental healing piece. So I think you all are going to enjoy this. Now, our show is uncut, unedited, and unscripted. So although we have these three references and there are certain things from the books that we're going to talk about, the discussion that follows is going to be totally unplanned. So we're going to jump right in. Again, thanks to our guests that are listening in. And Deb, I want to start off with Women's Bodies, women's wisdom. This book is the Women's Health Bible. And I just want to share a couple of things that the author says to give you an idea of how powerful this book is. She starts off by saying, well, she doesn't start off, but somewhere in the book, she says that when a woman enters into the work of healing her body and speaking her truth, that she must break through the collective field of fear and pain that is all around us and that has been around us for the past 5,000 years of the dominator society. And I chose that quote because what she's talking about is how a lot of the things that women are dealing with has a lot to do with the fact that we live in a male-dominated society that sort of dictates to us how our bodies should be. And a lot of times we become conditioned to think a certain way. And in this book, what she's doing is really like a pretty much like a call to action. She's telling women, you know, we need to learn how to love ourselves. We need to break down these beliefs that we might have, because in our bodies, we're carrying not only our own pain, but we're carrying things that our mothers and our grandmothers went through. And this author believes that it's built into us unconsciously. So we might not consciously be aware of all that we're carrying inside of us, but it's in there and it's deeply rooted. And so a lot of times, you know, we might have had mothers or grandmothers who were brought up to not really trust their bodies or the processes of their bodies or even talk about it. And so what she does is encourages us to face the truth. She actually gives us 7 steps for healing that I want to talk about. But let me just ask, Bev, if you're familiar with this book or the author, do you have anything that you want to share?
I am familiar with the author. I may have read the book earlier. There are times in our lives when we're faced, normally when we're faced with a crisis, when we try to find everything we possibly can for healing. And then once we're healed, we're like, okay, it can go on the shelf. I'm healed. I'm ready to go. So I'm sure that if I went to my bookshelf and looked under health for breast cancer and healing and all the other women's things, I would find that particular book. But what I will say is that women for so long, and I'm sure a lot of it is not conscious to us, we have so long allowed what the male thought about how we should look, how we should feel, what we should do, what our bodies should look like, how our bodies should feel. We have allowed them to dictate that, and even now, when you see a Viagra commercial, they assume that because the man has made this commercial to make the woman smile, that sex is okay. When a woman goes into a male doctor's office and says, you know, I'm having night sweats, I must be going through the change, and they tell you, no, it's not. We assume that because he's the male and he is the doctor, he is the authority, and we no longer listen to our own body. With women, talking to a man, no is still not no. And for some of us, we don't accept it. If he says, well, you really don't mean no, then we say, yeah, I guess I don't. And that is that is really a sad commentary on how little progress we've made in some areas of our lives.
Yeah, you just addressed 2 of her main steps for healing. I'm glad you brought that up. She has the 7 steps in her book towards the second half, and step number 5 is learn to respect your body. And in that step, she talks a lot about body image and where body image comes from, which you just touched on. And a lot of it can come from how other people tell us we should look, namely how men tell us we should look. And then her step 4 is learn to listen to your body. And so in listening to your body, you know, really listening to what it's telling you, about urges that you might have, whether those urges are sexual, whether they're just really normal functions you know, like, I've got to use the bathroom. Are you listening to your body when it says that? But one thing that you made me think of, Bev, is women and disowning their bodies and just wondering how many women are disconnected from their bodies. Like, I think about young girls that I've worked with, and from the head up is what they consider their body. But from the head down, it's like they don't take the time to get to know that part of themselves. You know, you have a lot of young girls who might not have never even touched their breasts, so they don't know what it feels like. But they're okay with having a young boy touch it first. You know what I mean? So, like, that part of owning ourselves. I was talking to a grown woman recently who had not actually looked at her body until she was a grown woman, like, actually looked at her body to see what it looked like. So, and I think about the Viagra commercial that you just mentioned. You know, how much of our conditioning is from that male-dominated society, and what can we do to start to embrace ourselves, respect our bodies, and listen to them, you know?
As you were talking, I thought, you know, we could go through some really graphic things, because when you talk about grown women looking at their bodies, I had a friend, it's been some time ago, but I had a friend who had had two children and was not sure what it looked like down there when she had the child. After she had had two children, she had no clue what was down there. So we don't want to get too graphic, but it is amazing to me that women don't know their bodies. And
yeah,
we allow them, you know, on a very surface level, we allow fashion to dictate how we should look on the outside, and we not recognize what it does to us on the inside or physically. 3 and 5 inch heels, your body is not meant to walk on 3 to 5 inch heels. It may make your legs look good when you walk past a man, but your body is not meant to be exposed all the time in the wintertime, no matter what. There are some things that, because the fashion designers, a lot of them male, what they want to see in a woman, we accept it. So we dress up the outside and ignore what's going on the inside. So you wear 3 to 5 inch heels when you're between 15 to 35, 45. And when you get 65, you have back problems. Take my word for it.
Okay.
So, you know, or you wear pointed toe shoes, and at 55, you have bunions. But we assume that other people know what is best for us. And I'm just taking that particular thing. We assume that other people know what's best for us. And whether it's fashion, whether it's sex, whether it's food, whether it's a skinny image, we assume that other people know what's best for us when we don't take time to assess how we really feel and how our body is affected by what we do. That makes sense?
That makes sense. And what I want to do is challenge all of us to go back to the first thing you said and the very last thing you said. The first thing being that we don't want to get too graphic. I want to encourage us to get graphic. In Bell Hooks' book, Sisters of the Yam, the very first chapter is called Tell the Truth. And she talks about how, as women, we need to start sharing our experiences, start having these discussions and talking about it, because that's what's been holding us back for so long. That's why you have women that can have multiple children and never actually looked down and seen her vulva or seen her vaginal area. And we have to ask ourselves, you know, what's the risk in telling the truth? And a lot of times we feel that we might be risking some vulnerability, or there's fear there. But I would encourage us to do that. And then the very last thing is really getting clear about our beliefs and what do we believe to be true about ourselves. That's actually something that all three of these authors talk about. They encourage people to look at what you believe to be true, where that belief came from, and then they all talk about the importance of coming to grips with your own personal truth, whether it's about what you believe about fashion, about health, like just everything. You have to be clear about what you believe, because we all have our own set of beliefs. And then as we go through life, our challenge is to walk and stand tall in those beliefs. So if we want to take it to the fashion level, whatever you believe to be true about those 5-inch heels, coming to grips about what you believe, because ultimately everybody's going to have their opinion, but you're not going to, you have to have your own personal opinion. I thought one thing that was really interesting is that you got bell hooks on one hand and saying, all right, as women, we need to come together. We need to talk about this. Tell the truth. And then you got Louise Hay and Northrup who are walking you through the process, like asking the questions that a coach would ask. And Northrup says, you know what, don't do this. I don't really recommend that you do this by yourself. She says, get together with some friends or a group and talk about it. And I think that's the missing link, because as women, we might not come together and have those open conversations. And it's funny because Bell Hooks, she talks a lot about how black women are kind of opposed to therapy, like we think it's a bad thing, But coming together collectively, what's wrong with that?
Because we don't want to talk about it. It's now you talk about a taboo, something that we've grown up with. Women did not talk to other women about their bodies, about their sex life, about anything that was even close to those issues. We just never have. It's always been a taboo. You had your babies and you moved on.
And I respect that, because we have different life experiences, and you bring a lot of wisdom from the years that you've been here. And so if you could maybe speak to that for a second for our listeners to kind of get an idea of what you mean by that. And I'll just briefly share, my grandmother, before she passed, it was maybe a couple of years before she passed away, we were doing an interview with her, me and my sister. We just wanted to capture some of her words on tape. And she would not answer a lot of questions. Her answer would be, no, we don't talk about that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk about that. Where does that come from? How do we break that?
Because part of it, I think, is that it was a mother-daughter thing, that you passed on what you needed to know to satisfy your husband and to raise your children, to be a good wife and mother. And that was all you needed to know. And I'm not sure where else it would have come from, except that a lot of women were too embarrassed to talk about it unless there were a group of women talking and they were joking about it. And then when I heard them joking about it, it was always surrounded in a conversation of sex. So it was never, or it was a very serious conversation about having your menstrual period. But there was never any talk about what it meant to, or you would hear things about keeping it clean. I mean, we're talking about going back to the old days with the water bottle and the vinegar and you made sure you kept it clean. But there was not that heart-to-heart discussion about how you really feel, what it looks like, if you've ever seen it, we didn't do self-breast exams. You never acknowledged your body. It was your body belonged to your husband.
And so now we're talking about really taking ownership over our bodies And, you know, I want to just really just thank my mother and her spirit right now, because when I was younger, I kind of got it, but I didn't. She took the risk in helping me to understand the value of my body, because she would talk about it, and she had no problem talking about it. And I look at between, like, her and the older generations in our family, they were very different. So the older generations were doing exactly what you were saying, like not talking about it. Whereas mm-hmm. my mother, you know, she was the woman who wasn't afraid to walk around the house naked and say, this is my body. I love my body. You need to love your body. And she would touch it. She'd say, yeah, my breath is sagging, but that's okay, you know.
mm-hmm.
And so as women, when we start to own our bodies, and it's really interesting how we refer to ourselves, and, you know, when we talk about our periods, and how I listen to some women that might think that the period is just that one time of the month. And when we look at our whole cyclical nature, the whole process in itself is so beautiful. Like, the whole month is really a cycle that we need to embrace. And I think as women, once we start to own ourselves and our bodies, then we'll really start to embrace the cycles and see the connection between our sexuality, our sensuality, our creativity, our roles and our purpose in the world and what we're supposed to be doing, because at each part of the cycle, different things are activated within us. You know, we have our times where we retreat and we go within and we do reflecting, and there's a reason for that. And then we have a time where we're just full of ambition and ideas, and then we have our nurturing times, and then we have our times where we're really very driven and we have that masculine energy. But until we start to talk about those things, and like you said, not put it in the context of where it's a joke or mm-hmm. where it's just about this one thing, then we'll start to heal. But what does that even look like? Like, where do we have those conversations?
you know, as you were talking, it really kind of hit me that women as nurturers always give more to other people until they're almost empty vessels, so that they don't go within to look until something is sick or something is upset or something is off course. We don't do preventive, well, some of us don't do preventive medicine. We don't do preventive reflection, but we give to the husband, we give to the children, we give to the in-laws, we give to the job, we give to the boss, to the church, so that we're always giving and never thinking about what we need to survive. And I think that is the heart of our mental health, our spiritual health, our physical health, because if we don't go inside, and we've said this on our show from the beginning, if you do not go inside to see who you really are, you're not, once you give everything, you won't know who you are when it's all gone.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you said that, because I know that that's a topic that you're very passionate about, that whole self-care piece. And I always remember the story about your mother, and how when your mother went in the bathroom, take her bath and have her devotional time, it was her time. Like, don't come in this bathroom because I'm in here. And everybody mm-hmm. respected that, and they knew that. And Bell Hooks has a whole chapter on that. And that's why I think every black woman needs to read this book, because she speaks the language that sometimes black women need to hear so that they can get it. But in her one of the chapters, she talks about how we have unhealthy patterns of always giving, giving, giving. And we've come to accept the fact that it's okay that mama is always working. And we believe that mama has to work and take care of everybody else. And it becomes ingrained in us. And I love one quote that she says, and I know this is going to hit home with you. She says that knowing when to quit is linked to knowing one's value.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yes. Because when you understand your value and your worth, then you realize that, okay, I got to take care of myself too, or else it won't be me to take care of anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Hmm. She also talks in that chapter about the importance of setting boundaries, because I know that's another thing that you're really passionate about too. And she says that, you know, well, I believe personally the struggle is optional. That's just bottom line. So if you're in a situation where you're always giving, depleting yourself, you're choosing the struggle. That's your choice if that's where it leads you to, and that's totally optional. And so one way to stop that is by setting boundaries, healthy boundaries, and it's okay to do that. But we have to give ourselves permission.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was telling you earlier about an exercise I was doing from a book that I was reading. And in it, she talks about auditing your schedule and looking at your allocation of time and energy on a daily, weekly, monthly, and yearly basis. And the first exercise, I have not gotten past the first chapter of this book because I did the first exercise. If you create percentage allocations for your time, what would this look like? Now, if we were talking about our physical health, our mental health, and our spiritual health, what would that look like on a day-to-day basis? When I looked at mine, Phoenicia, and saw that I was spending 16-hour days, I spend 16 hours a day trying to get done all the things that I think need to be done. My next step is to figure out what can be cut, because no one is supposed to be working 16 hours a day.
And I wonder, Bev, how can we, as women, start to redefine work? Because that is interesting, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate to working the long hours. One thing that Bell Hooks says is any task can become sacred when we do it mindfully and with care. So if I think about working 16-hour days, I want to ask myself, how much of that time is committed to sacred tasks? Or am I just doing things because I should do, feel like I should do them, I need to do them? I understand that there are things that we just have to do, and there's a lot of value in that, too, when you do tasks that might seem mundane. Mm-hmm. I've actually read that when you do mundane tasks like that, what it's doing is allowing your subconscious time to kind of work and do its own thing so that you can be more creative and more alive. So you do need to have that balance. But how can we find joy in our work so that we can make life sweet, you know?
Well, in my own defense, out of those 16 hours, three of them are in fitness, that's spiritual and physical, and relaxation. So 3 hours of the 16 hours, which is I'm not talking about bedtime, I will stop and I will have a meal where I actually sit and eat, not stand up and eat, not walk and eat, not talk on the phone and eat. And I have a time where I will sit with devotion, meditation or something. So 3 hours out of every day is for personal care.
And that's wonderful. I'm glad you did clarify that, because people need to hear that. And because in doing that, what you're doing is indulging in things that not only give you pleasure and keep you balanced, but they're activating your the parasympathetic nervous system. So you have the two nervous systems. You have the parasympathetic and you have the sympathetic. And so a lot of people that tend to be stressed out, they have an overactive sympathetic nervous system. That's like the stress part of them. And then when you take those 3 hours to do things that you enjoy or for that balance in your life, you're activating the parasympathetic nervous system. And so you need that. That's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's those unhealthy patterns that people might have that keep their sympathetic nervous system overactive. And that's why they become so stressed out. Work, 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 work. Do,
mm-hmm.
You know. Do you think that's an addiction?
And I'm not talking about on-the-job work. I'm talking, you know, because we assume that work is, you know, that I'm on a job. I don't have a corporate job. I'm talking about between my caregiving, my house, my expenses, all the things that you do around the house, all the things you do for other people, you know, the whole email thing, 16 hours, and then, of course, in disperse are the 3 hours of relaxation. So it's, we're not talking about on the job 16 hours. If you spend 7.5 hours on your job, then look at the time that you spend doing the other things that you need to do to take care of the rest of your environment.
Mm-hmm. And I love the part where you mentioned your devotional, because regardless of what people might believe about their spirituality or how that manifests, like, you have to have something that addresses that aspect of your life, whether
mm-hmm.
it's your devotional, going to church, walking in nature, whether it's having sex. A lot of people, that can be spiritual. dancing, drumming, singing, like, you have to do that and devote time to it and make it a habit, a sacred ritual in your life. I'm so glad you pointed that out. That's actually one of the steps. So it's like everything that we're talking about here, these are the steps that these women are talking about in their book. These are things that women need to do. But I'm wondering, I have a question for you, Beth. Do you think that overworking and taking care of other people and not putting ourselves first can be an addiction? Like, can people be addicted to that?
I'm not sure I would call it. Maybe it is an addiction. Depending on how you look at it, it could also be pride. It could be dependence. It's the one thing you depend on, because people depend on you. And when people depend on you, it makes you feel good. So it may be part of your self-worth. So addiction may be just one thing, but I do believe that there are some women who do it because they feel that is, you know, that's what keeps them going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I like how you made that distinction. There is a part of us innately as women that is that caregiving piece,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we can't deny that because it is innate within us. But I think when it starts to take control of your life and it starts to get in the way of you defining who you are, then that's when it becomes a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay. Wow. Well, we've got about 15 minutes left in the show, Beverly. We did not even stop to take our break like we usually do. This must be a good topic, huh?
Look, it is so important to be healthy. And you don't realize how important it is until you no longer have it. The fact that you're able to get up in the morning, whether you need assistance or, you know, whatever it is, how do you get up in the morning? And do you want to change how you feel when you get up in the morning? What are you saying to yourself before you get out of the bed? You know, and the fact that you can maybe go to the bathroom on your own without assistance, that's the whole physical health. When you think about mental health, can you articulate how you feel, what you think, where you want to go, so that people understand you? That's physical health, but mental health also is, do you see visions? Do you see people? Are things going on in your head that make you psychotic? You know, do you have a mental problem? Then there's your spiritual health. How often do you connect with your Creator? What do you believe? What are your value systems about, you know, who keeps you and who will keep you out of depression? Who will keep you moving? Who holds you? What support system do you have, whether it's physical, mental, or spiritual? Where's your support system? Are you bitter? Are you angry? Are you envious? Who can you talk to on a regular basis? All of those things, if there is anything lacking anywhere, it will affect your health. I am convinced to this day that the amount of stress that I had in the corporate world was a big cause of my breast cancer. I was working 16-hour days, but I was on the job. You know, I was bringing it home, and even when I wasn't physically doing it, I was thinking about it or I was talking about it. So I had 16-hour days when that was my total focus, and I was ignoring what it was doing to my body. I was not eating well. I was not exercising. I was half praying. I was half going to church. I was half talking with people about other things other than the job. I am convinced that that left something in my system that caused that or that allowed breast cancer to grow.
Thank you so much for your honesty with that and for sharing that, because that is very real. And you're speaking to how we can internalize things to activate sort of illnesses within our body. I want to briefly talk about the breast and what Louise Hayes says about that, because I'm so glad you shared that. And then the whole piece about, like, listening to your body. Beth, I was at a school recently with talking with the principal and the assistant principal, and we were talking about work. You know, I'm on there with having a coaching conversation, which quickly led to a health conversation. And these women were so honest when they shared with me that sometimes they get so caught up in their day, and they're going and going and going all day, work, 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 that they do not listen to their body when the body says, I need to urinate, I need to eat. And so they go the entire day depriving themselves of their natural functions. And that stress, and they're holding all this stuff in, and of course it's going to lead to some type of illness. So that's what your example made me think of. But of course, breast cancer is a lot more intense. And so Louise Hay, her book, You Can Heal Your Life, she talks a lot about the physical and mental connection, the mind-body connection. And there's a whole section where she talks about how breasts represent the mothering principle for us as women. And so sometimes over-mothering can lead to illnesses in the breast, but you specifically talked about how you believe things that you were doing were being internalized. Do you mind talking a little bit more about that?
Well, I'm sure a lot of it was pride. A lot of it was the world saying, you know, this is what you do. This is, you know, dictated by how you get ahead. And the pride for me, because I was always, in every job I've had, I was either the first black female or the only black female in a position. You know, the position would open up and I would be either the only black or the first black. So it was a matter of pride for me to always be at the top of my game, to always be the best. And to do that, I would strive more and more and more. So to strive more and more and more and stay on top of the game and to play everybody's role so that I would know where I needed to be at what particular time, I was always in it, always in it. So that even the people that I had surround me were people in the association management business. My friends were in association management. I did see family once in a while, but my life was association management. And that is not a healthy state to be in. It simply wasn't.
So that lack of balance and, like you said, not you were half doing stuff, that kind of created or helped to create this illness in your body?
Yes.
Is that what you...
Yes, yeah. I was always stressed. I was traveling. I was gone at least a weekend a month, at least one weekend a month. I was always on the telephone. I had always had reports to do. I always had people to talk to or to answer to. And then I was managing five women. And as much as I love us, managing five women from a diverse group of ages, backgrounds, and lifestyles is tough. So getting them to do what I needed them to do to make sure the organization was running well was also stressful.
Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest takeaway is that the body is always talking to us and telling us what we need. Sometimes we just have to give ourselves a space to listen to it, but then also that everything that you're doing is affecting your body internally, whether
Absolutely.
It's what you're doing physically or what you're thinking. Yeah, yes. Mm. I think we're
going to have to... We talked earlier about surrounding yourself with people who were good for you, and that's where we go back to the self-reflection. What is really good for you? What is your purpose? What is your passion? How do you surround yourself with people who give you a good balance and not focus on one piece? Because we are about, we are supposed to be balanced.
Mm-hmm.
And the balance for Phoenicia is different from the balance for Beverly. But you need to know what your balance is.
Yes. And just as you said earlier in the show, you said that when you were looking for information about healing for breast cancer, you know, you were finding different books and different resources. And I think when women are really hungry and ready to find that balance, then things in their life will start to fall into place. But we don't want you to get to a point where you're, like, desperate and broken down that you start to look for these resources and finding balance in your life. Like, you have to start looking just even when you're whole and healthy, because you want to sustain that balance in your life and not be broken to have to find the balance. You know, a lot of times women, we wait until we break down before we go out for help. You know, we don't want to wait until it's too late.
We wait until we're backed in the corner. We will, and not only when we talk about health, and we didn't even hit this, and we're 8 minutes away from the end, but we didn't even talk about this, Phoenicia. Think about when you tolerate, you know, our tolerance level, when we tolerate certain people, certain attitudes, certain environments, and we tolerate it before we decide we're going to say anything or make a change. That toleration, being that tolerant for a long period of time, can damage your health, physical, mental, and spiritual, so that those of us who wait until we're backed in the corner before we say anything and then we explode is not a good thing.
Yes, and we definitely need to address that later. I think that's so important. And the flip side of that, to think of how liberating it is when you actually say yes to what you want, not what other people want. And it's like really trusting where you get that message from. Like, I believe we get messages either from our head, our heart, or from our gut. You know what I mean? And so if a friend asks you, calls you up and say, hey, Bev, I got tickets to the show on Friday. Do you want to go? And then if initially you get this response like, ooh, no, I really don't want to go because Friday was supposed to be set aside for me to have my me time. But then you ignore that and you say, you know what? Yeah, I'll go. And then you end up going and have a bad time anyway. You know, I know it's a small example, but just really saying yes to yourself for little things like that makes a huge difference. And then you don't have as many of those tolerations. And then it gives you permission to say yes to other things because it feels so good.
Mm. Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why I am going to start looking at my allocations for the day.
Okay. And so starting the day off and saying, okay, what do I have to do today? What do I want to do today? What do I have planned so that when something comes up, you always say to me, nature abhors a vacuum. No vacuum here.
Yeah, when you start talking about your priorities and what you really want and what you really like and, you know, what needs to be done, life, once again, as we say every week, life is about choices. What am I going to choose that will benefit my life the most, that will benefit me benefit my health, mind, body, and spirit the most?
Mm-hmm. And how can I choose to make it great? You know, we've got just a few minutes left, so it's definitely time for us to start wrapping up, but we want people to continue to choose to make it great. Any final thoughts,
My final thought is that if you really want to be healthy, find out first what is lacking, whether it's your nutrition, whether it's your spirituality, whether it's your exercise, whatever it is, you need to go inside your own mind, your own head, and this is a good time. We're in the first month of 2013 to figure out what it is you want and you expect for the rest of this year. Do your own percentage allocations of how you want your life to look for 2013.
All right. I love it. I love it. And tell people how they can connect with you, Bev.
You can connect with me at FromMamasHouse@att.net. And I would love for you to like From Mama's House on Facebook. And I do have a website. It's FromMamasHouse.net.
Fantastic. And everyone can join me this Tuesday when I do my Tuesday teaching teleclass. We'll be talking in depth about the works of Louise Hay. It's where you can come and join the discussion and get some tips on how you can choose to make it great, live a great life, and connect with positively minded people. You can get the details from our website at tanisha.com. That's F as in fantastic, E-N-E-S-H-A. Thanks for joining us this Sunday. We look forward to connecting with you next Sunday when we talk about career, and we'll have a guest speaker on next Sunday, Ms. Sharonda Crone. So until then, choose to make it great.
She is understanding her core values. She is developing her sense of purpose. She is recreating her true self. She is enhancing the quality of her life. She is uplifting her, dedicated to the empowerment of women. Women who are seeking to experience more purposeful lives. Uplifting Her provides practical solutions for women to experience total healing, including intimate small group sessions, one-on-one private consultations, and life-changing workshops. Uplifting Her also provides healing and empowerment retreats. So if you're a party of one, or maybe a unique one of a group, Uplifting Her is dedicated to uplifting, well, you. Uplifting Her looks forward to serving you. Visit us online at upliftinghher.com or send us an email inquiry at info@upliftinghher.com. Uplifting Her. Get uplifted today.
Who is Candace Cole? I am a singer-songwriter and a storyteller. At the heart of all my work is encouraging and empowering people to fully express themselves without apology. The world is a much more beautiful and better place when you are fully being yourself. To find out more about all the work that I am doing, please visit www.playinginthelight.org.
I am great, not because someone told me, but because I believe. I believe in my abilities to achieve the impossible. I am strong beyond measure. I am smart without a doubt. High I will aim. Shout loudly I proclaim that I am great. I am great from my inner core. Deeply, I believe that no obstacle is too large, too much to overcome. I am a conqueror. Opposition I will slay, for this is the day I say that I am great. I am great. I know who I am. I stand tall and erect. Nothing intimidates me. From the moment I begin, I win. I am defined by greatness and nothing less. My only option is success. Action proves it best that I am great.